Southwest, Alaska, 1999. You're flying a Cessna 207 out of Bethel, loaded with cargo, headed toward a village strip you've flown dozens of times. Low clouds, visibility tightening. Somewhere ahead of you, maybe 5 miles, another pilot is inbound from the other direction. Neither of you knows the other exists. That was not a hypothetical. That was Tuesday. I'm Vector Uncleared Direct, and this is Radio Hangar. Today I want to take you back to the experiment that proved ADS-B could work before most of the country had even heard the term. The Alaska Capstone Program. It was messy, underfunded in places, built on improvised infrastructure in some of the most remote terrain in the world. And it still managed to change the course of aviation surveillance in America. But first, a quick word. This segment is supported by AviationSoul.com. They make aviation challenge coins that mark the real milestones. First solo, private pilot, instrument rated, CFI, the whole journey. Beautifully made and built to last. AviationSoul.com now. Alaska, if you've never flown there, the numbers alone are jarring. In the late 1990s, Alaska had roughly 3 times the aviation accident rate of the lower 48. And this wasn't because Alaskan pilots were careless or poorly trained. Many of them were extraordinarily skilled, flying routes every week that most certificated pilots would never attempt in a lifetime. The problem was the environment, compounded by a surveillance gap nobody had solved. Alaska's geography is unforgiving in ways that take a moment to absorb. Terrain rises from sea level to over 20,000 feet within the span of a single sectional chart. Weather systems move faster than any briefing can track. Villages across the state depend on air service, not as a convenience, but as a lifeline. No roads, no other options. Mail, freight, medical evacuations, groceries, all of it moves by air. The Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta alone covers an area the size of Oregon, and the only thing connecting its communities is a network of small aircraft and unpaved strips. Bush pilots in that environment flew in conditions that would ground operations almost anywhere else. Not because they were reckless, because the community needed them to fly. And here's the surveillance reality they faced. Controllers in Anchorage had radar coverage over the populated corridors and the major airports. But in rural Alaska, that coverage dropped away fast. In the Southwest, once you were away from Bethel and the coast, you could fly for hours and be completely invisible to anyone on the ground. No radar return, no traffic advisories, no picture of what else was in the airspace around you. Traffic separation depended on pilot radio calls on common traffic advisory frequencies, the CTAF. Local knowledge and the informal awareness that built up among pilots who knew each other's routes and schedules. The system worked until it didn't. And when it didn't, the results were often fatal. Mid-air collisions in valley corridors where two aircraft converged on the same course with neither visible to the other. Controlled flight into terrain in deteriorating visibility. VFR into IMC, the trap that Alaska weather sets constantly, that shift from marginal to instrument conditions faster than any forecast captured. The National Transportation Safety Board's accident reports from that period read the same way. Repeatedly. One additional piece of information might have changed the outcome. Here's what most people miss. The technology to address this already existed, at least in concept. The Federal Aviation Administration, or FAA, had been developing what would become Automatic Dependent Surveillance Broadcast, ADS-B, through the late 1980s and early 90s. The idea was straightforward once you understood it. Instead of depending on ground radar sweeping through space, hoping to catch a return off an aircraft's skin or transponder, what if the aircraft broadcast its own position, GPS-derived position, pressure altitude, identity, ground speed, track, all of it continuously, out over the radio? Every equipped aircraft within range hears every other equipped aircraft. No radar sweep delay, no coverage void over mountainous terrain that blocks the radar beam. Continuous aircraft-to-aircraft awareness. The FAA knew the concept was sound. What they needed was operational proof in a real environment with real consequences. They picked Alaska. The Capstone program, officially launched in 1999, managed through the FAA's William J. Hughes Technical Center with field operations centered on Bethel. The FAA partnered with Raytheon, which built the Universal Access Transceivers, or UATs, that would go in the aircraft. They worked with Alaskan commercial operators, the cargo carriers, the air taxi services, the medevac outfits, to get equipment installed and flying in actual operations. The frequency they chose was 978 MHz. UAT is a broadcast format purpose-built for aviation, optimized for the low-altitude environment where the airline transponder format wasn't a natural fit. If 978 MHz sounds familiar, it should. It is one of the two ADS-B frequencies required under the FAA mandate that went into effect on January 1, 2020. The technology chain runs directly from Bethel 1999 to the four-flight display on your yoke right now. Installing the equipment in bush planes was not a trivial exercise. De Havilland Beavers, Cessna 207s, Piper Navajos, the workhorses of the Alaska bush, had not been designed with a data transceiver in mind. The UAT needed antenna placement, power supply, and connection to the panel in a way that didn't interfere with existing systems and didn't add unacceptable weight on airframes where margins were already tight. Mechanics and avionics shops in Bethel learned to install a system that was, in 1999, not fully mature. Some of the early hardware had reliability problems. Some installations were more improvised than the engineers in Atlantic City would have preferred. The pilots flew with it anyway. The cockpit display each aircraft received was a moving map, and it showed two things that mattered enormously. Traffic. Every other equipped aircraft in range appeared on the display with position, altitude differential, and track. You could see whether another aircraft was converging, crossing, or pulling away. In a valley corridor, you could see the aircraft coming the other direction before you could possibly see it visually. The reaction time that bought was measured in seconds. In mountain flying, seconds are the whole conversation. Terrain. Geo-referenced. Color-coded elevation data that moved with the aircraft. The system showed you where the ground was relative to where you were, not on a static chart you were interpreting mentally, but in real time on a moving picture. For approaches into terrain-surrounded strips in marginal visibility, the situational awareness gain was significant in ways that are hard to overstate if you've never flown that environment. The system also pushed what the FAA called Flight Information Service Broadcast, FISB, weather data, graphical METAR information, SIGMET boundaries, pilot reports, all of it streamed from ground stations to any equipped aircraft in range. No radio call to flight service required. The weather picture arrived automatically. Ground stations were the infrastructure challenge. The aircraft side was a compact box. The ground station network in rural Alaska had to be built from scratch in places with no grid power, no paved access, and no communications infrastructure to carry data back. Solar power, satellite backhaul, weather-hardened enclosures installed at sites that were accessible, in some cases only by air. Building surveillance infrastructure across the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta is not the same problem as building it around Denver. The FAA worked through it. Coverage was incomplete in Phase 1, but it covered the routes that mattered most, the corridors between Bethel and the village strips that saw the highest traffic density. The accident data in capstone-equipped areas declined. The FAA's own analysis documented a measurable reduction in fatal accidents in the program area relative to the trend preceding it. Researchers were careful about confounding variables. Capstone participants tended to be experienced operators who may have been more safety-focused in general. The program coincided with other safety initiatives. Clean attribution in accident statistics is never straightforward, but the direction was clear. Researchers also noted something worth understanding. The technology wasn't changing how skilled the pilots were. It was filling an information gap that skill alone cannot bridge. You cannot maintain separation from traffic you cannot see. You cannot avoid terrain that isn't displayed. Those are not failure modes of the pilot. They are failure modes of the information environment. Capstone changed the information environment. That was enough for the FAA to expand the program. Phase 2 extended ADS-B coverage across more of Alaska, adding ground stations, equipping more aircraft, including smaller operators who hadn't been part of the initial rollout. By the time Phase 2 concluded, several hundred aircraft were operating with the system, and the program had demonstrated operational ADS-B surveillance across a region roughly the size of Texas. The data from Capstone shaped the FAA's entire next-gen strategy. NextGen was the FAA's long-running modernization initiative, and ADS-B was its cornerstone. The surveillance inversion Capstone proved aircraft reporting their own position rather than being interrogated by radar was the foundation of how NextGen's automation systems would manage traffic. The national mandate followed the Capstone evidence more directly than most regulatory timelines do. January 1, 2020. ADS-B out required in Class A, B, and C airspace, and in Class E above 10,000 feet. The surveillance picture the FAA's automation now sees is built primarily from those broadcasts. Let me break down the gap that still exists in what pilots actually see. ADS-B has two sides. Out is what you broadcast. In is what you receive. The FAA mandated out. They did not mandate. In a fully compliant aircraft, legal everywhere the mandate applies, can have a pilot who sees zero ADS-B traffic in the cockpit unless they purchased separate equipment. The reasoning wasn't irrational. Mandating a specific display standard for cockpit equipment gets complicated by certification processes and the variation in avionics installations across a general aviation fleet of hundreds of thousands of aircraft. The thinking was that out compliance would create the data layer and the market would drive in adoption. The market has helped considerably. Portable receivers from Stratus, Sentry, and others connect to a tablet running 4Flight or Garmin Pilot for a few hundred dollars. That's genuinely accessible. Panel-mounted ADS-B in capability has come down in cost as the equipment matured. But the picture has limits that are important to understand. You see ADS-B out-equipped aircraft clearly. You see Mode C traffic through Traffic Information Service Broadcast, TISB, which is a ground station rebroadcast of radar-derived traffic returns. But TISB has coverage floors. Below certain altitudes, below certain radar coverage, the rebroadcast service disappears. Aircraft without any transponder, legal in uncontrolled airspace below certain altitudes, don't appear at all. The Capstone pilots in Alaska knew their display wasn't the complete picture. It was a better picture. That framing is still the right one today. What Capstone foreshadowed, and this is worth thinking about now, is ADS-B as the surveillance backbone for unmanned and autonomous aircraft. The FAA's remote ID rules require drones operating outside recognized identification areas to broadcast position, identity, and control station location. The surveillance logic is conceptually identical to what those Bush pilots had in Bethel in 1999. As eVTOL operations scale and urban air corridors develop, the infrastructure built on ADS-B principles is what has to support that density. The rural Alaska experiment is the ancestor of whatever the urban airspace picture looks like in 2035. The pilots who flew Phase 1 weren't doing it for the avionics upgrade. They flew cargo and passengers and medical evacuations in some of the worst operational environments on Earth, and they agreed to be the testbed for something that wasn't proven. They filed reports, they dealt with equipment that sometimes let them down, they worked with FAA engineers who were learning alongside them. The accident data behind Capstone is not just a statistics table, it represents real flights that went wrong before the system existed to help. That it led to what you're flying inside today is something worth knowing. FAA Capstone Program reports and analysis from the RTCA, formerly the Radio Technical Commission for Aeronautics, were my primary sources today, along with reporting from Aviation Week. More at radiohangar.com. I'm Vector. See you next time.